Hey everyone, and welcome back. Today we're going deep on defensive cybersecurity, and we've got some awesome insights to share from Krishna Kumar Mahadevan.
MKK.
MKK, that's right. A total veteran in the field. 28 years of experience.
Almost 100 consulting engagements.
Yeah. I mean, talking about impressive. We're breaking down one of his latest articles, so get ready for a crash course in the tools and tactics that the pros use.
Behind the scenes stuff, how they actually keep systems safe.
Exactly. So MKK starts off talking about this concept of defense in depth. Sounds kind of straightforward, but
it is.
What are we really talking about here?
Yeah, it's like a, you know, building a fortress, right? Like you wouldn't rely on just one wall.
Makes sense.
You'd have layers, moats, guard towers, you name it. And defense in depth is the same logic, but for the digital world. It's that whole idea that no single security product can be perfect.
Right.
So you create these overlapping layers of protection to make it as hard as possible for those attackers.
So it's more like a whole ecosystem for security.
Exactly. It's not about that one magic solution.
Okay, I like it.
And that brings us to something everyone knows, antivirus software.
Yeah.
But MKK makes a good point that the old school way of doing it, you know, just looking for those signatures of known threats, it's got its limits.
Like it's not enough anymore.
It's like you're trying to catch a criminal, but all you have are fingerprints.
Oh, I see.
If you've never seen those fingerprints before, you're out of luck.
Right.
And that's where NGAV comes in, next generation antivirus.
Things are getting futuristic.
Right. This is where AI comes in and behavioral analysis, so you can anticipate those threats, even the brand new ones.
So it's not just recognizing the bad guys, but
it's about knowing what bad behavior looks like and stopping it before things go wrong.
Wow. So the systems are learning and adapting.
You got it.
That is impressive. But what if, even with all that, something still happens?
Good point. So that's when you move from prevention to response.
Okay.
And MKK introduces what I call the incident response trio, EDR, MDR, XDR.
Whoa. Okay. Lots of acronyms. Let's break those down one by one.
Sure.
EDR. What is that all about?
EDR stands for Endpoint Detection and Response. It goes way beyond just those file signatures.
So what's it doing?
Monitoring the behavior of all those devices. Laptops, workstations, servers, everything.
Like Big Brother, but for good.
Kind of. Think of it as a detective watching everything, looking for anything suspicious.
Not just spotting known threats.
Right. It's about recognizing unusual behavior that screams trouble.
Gotcha. So what makes EDR so effective? Why is everyone using it?
One of the best things is it can automate those responses. Say a device starts acting weird.
Oh.
EDR can automatically isolate that device before any malware spreads, like containing a fire. You know?
Smart. Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. So we've got EDR acting as a detective on each device. What about MDR?
So MDR, or Managed Detection and Response, it's basically outsourcing that EDR stuff to the experts, like having a whole team of cybersecurity pros on call 24/7.
That would be a relief.
Right. They monitor everything, respond to threats, even while you're sleeping.
I like the sound of that.
It's perfect for companies that maybe don't have all the in-house expertise or just don't have the resources for EDR.
Makes sense. Especially for smaller businesses.
Yeah, exactly.
So EDR is the detective, MDR is the security force. What about XDR? Where does that fit in?
So XDR stands for Extended Detection and Response, and it takes things even broader.
How so?
Instead of just those individual endpoints, it covers your whole IT environment.
The big picture.
Yes. Network stuff, cloud services, everything. Imagine your security system can see the whole city.
Wow. Instead of just individual houses.
Exactly. So it can detect and respond to those really tricky attacks that might go unnoticed otherwise. Connecting the dots.
That sounds incredibly powerful.
It is.
But with all that data coming in from everywhere.
Yeah, it's a lot.
How do security teams even manage it all? How do they make sense of it?
That's where two more tools come in, SIEM and SOAR. They're like the brains and the brawn of your cybersecurity operation.
Okay, the dynamic duo. Tell me more about them.
So SIEM stands for Security Information and Event Management, and it's like your central command center for all that security data.
Okay.
Imagine a room full of screens showing you real-time info from every part of your network.
That's a lot of screens.
Right, and that's what a SIEM does. It gathers all those logs and alerts from your security tools, analyzes everything, and then presents it to your team in a way that's actually understandable so they can act on it.
So it's like the control panel that gives you that complete picture of your security.
You got it. And that's where SOSAR steps in. Security orchestration, automation, and response.
Okay.
So SOSAR takes all that info from SIEM and turns it into action.
So it's the one that actually does something.
Exactly. Imagine a whole army of robots that are ready to respond to threats based on preset instructions.
So it takes the heavy lifting off the humans.
Yeah. That way, your human analysts can focus on those really complex threats that need human intuition and expertise.
Makes a lot of sense. So it makes your team way more efficient.
Exactly. Faster and more coordinated responses. But MKK makes a good point that even with all this amazing tech, the human element is still so important.
Right. People are still a big part of the equation.
Definitely. And that brings us to SOC's security operations centers.
The heart of any cybersecurity operation.
Exactly. They're the ones who monitor everything, analyze those threats, investigate incidents, you name it. They're like the special forces of cybersecurity.
They're the ones on the front lines keeping everything safe.
Yeah, they have a huge responsibility. Now let's talk about something a bit more familiar. Firewalls.
Yeah, everyone's heard of those.
Right. We all know they're important, but the way we think about them needs to change.
What do you mean?
That traditional way of just blocking traffic based on ports and protocols, it's just not cutting it anymore.
It's like trying to stop a tank with a picket fence.
Right. You need something stronger, something smarter to keep up with these modern attackers.
What do we need?
Next-gen firewalls.
Next-gen. Everything's next-gen now.
Right. But these are much smarter, much more adaptable.
So what makes them different?
They use deep packet inspection application awareness, even artificial intelligence.
Wow.
To analyze all those traffic patterns and identify the threats that might slip past those old school firewalls.
So they're not just looking at where the traffic's coming from.
Right. They're looking at what it's doing, how it's behaving.
Like a security guard that can spot a fake ID even if it looks perfect.
Exactly. They can see those malicious patterns even if it looks legit at first glance.
I'm starting to see why next gen is so important.
Mm-hmm.
But even with those super advanced firewalls.
Yeah, you still need more.
There's got to be a chance something slips through.
Of course. And that's where intrusion detection systems come in. IDSs.
Okay. Tell me more about those.
They're like the watchdogs of your network.
Mm.
Constantly monitoring traffic, looking for any sign of trouble.
Like security cameras, but for your network.
That's a good way to put it.
Right.
They're your early warning system, alerting you to those potential threats that might have gotten past your other defenses.
So they're essential then?
Oh, yeah. They give you that record of what happened, even if you didn't see anything suspicious in real time.
Got it. So how do they actually detect those intrusions? Is it all automatic or are humans involved?
It's a bit of both, actually. There are two main ways they work, signature-based and behavioral-based.
Okay, let's start with signature-based. How does that work?
So signature-based, it's all about patterns. The IDS looks for specific patterns in the network traffic that match known threats.
So it's like they have a fingerprint database of all the bad guys.
Exactly. And if they see a match, they sound the alarm.
Makes sense. But I bet that has limitations too.
You're right. Attackers are always coming up with new tricks, finding ways to hide what they're doing.
Right. So you need something more than just those fingerprints.
Exactly. And that's where behavioral-based detection comes in. It's all about establishing what's normal for your network and then looking for anything that deviates from that.
So it's like having a security guard who knows everyone's faces and routines.
Right. And if someone's acting out of character, they know something's up.
I like that analogy. So it's not just about looking for known threats, but also about spotting anything unusual.
Precisely. It's much more proactive. But both methods have their challenges.
What kind of challenges?
Well, there's the risk of false positives where the system flags something as a threat when it's actually harmless.
Ah, like a false alarm.
Right. And that can be a real headache for security teams because they have to sift through all that noise to find the real threats.
It's like the security guard calling in a suspicious character who turns out to be perfectly harmless.
Exactly. And then there's the flip side. False negatives.
Right.
Where the system fails to detect a real threat.
Oh, that's much worse.
Right? That's like the security guard missing the actual criminal while focusing on someone who just looks a bit different.
Definitely don't want that. So with those limitations, how do we make intrusion detection more effective?
Well, that's where we shift from detection to prevention, and MKK introduces intrusion prevention systems, or IPSs.
Okay, those sound more proactive.
Exactly. They're the ones that can actually step in and block those attacks in real time.
So they're like the security guards who can actually intervene and stop a crime from happening.
That's a great way to think about it. They're designed to be much more proactive, actively stopping attacks before any damage is done.
This is getting really interesting. So what are some of the things an IPS can do to block an attack?
They can drop those malicious network packets, reset connections, even block traffic from certain IP addresses.
So they have a few tricks up their sleeve.
They do. And they can also work with firewalls for even stronger protection.
It's like they're teaming up.
Right. A 1-2 punch for your security.
So IPSs sound like a crucial part of any good security setup. But if they can both detect and prevent threats, are IDSs becoming obsolete?
That's a great question, and it's something security professionals are really debating. Some say, yes, IPSs make IDS unnecessary, but others think there's still a place for both.
So it's all about having multiple layers of protection just in case one fails.
Exactly. You never want to put all your eggs in one basket when it comes to security.
Makes sense. So we've got our proactive defenses with those vulnerability assessment tools.
Right.
What else does MKK talk about in terms of building that strong security posture?
Well, he reminds us about network segmentation.
Did we touch on that before?
We did, but it's so important. It's worth another look.
Okay, I'm ready for a deeper dive.
Think of it like a ship.
Okay.
You wouldn't design a ship with just one giant compartment.
If there's a hole, the whole thing sinks.
Exactly. Ships have multiple compartments, so if one gets flooded, the rest stay afloat. Network segmentation is that same idea, but for your network.
So you're creating those compartments within your network, isolating different areas to prevent a breach in one spot from bringing the whole thing down.
You got it. By dividing your network into smaller chunks, you limit how much damage a security breach can do.
Like separate rooms with different levels of security.
Right. You might have a segment for finance, one for HR, another for your guest Wi-Fi.
So even if someone hacks the guest Wi-Fi, they can't get to the sensitive financial data.
Exactly. Segmentation contains those breaches and protects your most valuable assets.
Makes sense. So it's all about making it as hard as possible for attackers to move around and giving your security team time to respond.
Precisely. It's a key part of that defense in depth strategy.
So how do you actually do it? How do you segment a network?
MKK mentions a couple of common ways. VLANs and subnetting.
Those sound familiar.
They might. We touched on them briefly before, but let's go a bit deeper.
Okay. I'm all ears.
So VLANs stand for virtual local area networks, and they're a way to create logical segments within your physical network.
So like creating virtual walls to separate different departments.
Exactly. Like having different rooms within the same building, but they're virtual.
Makes sense. And subnetting.
Subnetting is about dividing your IP address space into smaller pieces.
That sounds more technical.
It is, but the idea is the same. Creating those boundaries to isolate parts of your network.
It's all about compartmentalization.
Yes. Limiting access and preventing a small breach from becoming a big one.
But I bet managing a segmented network can get complicated.
It can, especially for large organizations. You need to plan it carefully.
Right. It's not just something you can slap together.
Definitely not. But the security benefits are usually worth the extra effort.
Right. It's all about finding that balance.
Exactly. And MKK takes this idea even further and talks about micro-segmentation.
Micro-segmentation. That sounds even more intense.
It is. While regular segmentation is about dividing the network into zones, micro-segmentation gets way more specific.
How so?
It's about applying security policies at a much finer level.
So instead of walls between rooms, it's like walls between individual pieces of furniture.
That's a great way to think about it. With micro-segmentation, you can control exactly what can talk to what, really locking things down.
Sounds pretty powerful.
It is. Huh. And it's especially important for cloud environments where those traditional network boundaries get a bit blurry.
Right. The cloud changes everything.
It does. But micro-segmentation gives you that control back, ensuring that even in the cloud, your sensitive data is protected.
So like those walls are still there, they're just invisible.
Exactly. You've got that granular control.
Okay. I can see why that's important. Mm-hmm. Now, MKK also mentions this thing called zero trust architecture. Is that what I think it is?
It might be. It's a pretty big deal in cybersecurity these days.
I've heard the term, but I'm not really sure what it means.
It's a whole new way of thinking about security. Instead of trusting everyone by default and then verifying them.
Which is how it used to be.
Right. Zero trust says you should never trust, always verify.
So you're basically suspicious of everyone, even your own employees.
In a way, yes. It means every user and device, no matter where they are, needs to be verified every time they try to access anything.
So it's like having a security checkpoint at every single door, even for people who are already inside the building.
Exactly. It's much more strict, much more proactive.
So what caused this shift to zero trust? Why is everyone talking about it now?
Well, a few things. The threats are getting worse, more sophisticated.
We've talked about that.
Right. And those old perimeter defenses just aren't enough anymore. Plus, the way we work has changed.
Everyone's remote now.
Exactly. Cloud computing, mobile devices, remote work. All that makes those old network boundaries way less clear.
It's like the walls have holes in them.
Right. And zero trust helps you secure access no matter where the user or device is.
So location doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly. It's all about verifying every single request every time, no exceptions.
Sounds intense. So what are the big ideas behind Zero Trust? What are the key principles?
There are a few, but the main ones are assuming breach, least privilege access, continuous verification, and microsegmentation.
We've already talked about microsegmentation.
Right, and those other principles are pretty straightforward.
Assuming breach, meaning you act like someone's already gotten in.
Exactly. Least privilege, meaning people only get access to what they absolutely need.
And continuous verification, meaning you're always checking, never assuming trust.
You got it. It's a complete change in how we think about security.
It sounds like it. A move from reactive to proactive.
Exactly. Anticipating threats and stopping them before they can cause damage.
I like it. Now, moving on from zero trust,
Sure.
MKK discusses multi-factor authentication, or MFA.
Ah,
Yeah.
MFA. Simple but so effective.
I know it's something everyone should be using, but to be honest, I don't.
It's just adding an extra layer of security to your accounts.
Okay.
So instead of just your password, which is something you know,
Right.
MFA makes you provide something, you have like a code or something. You are like a fingerprint.
Oh, I see. So it's like having two locks on your door.
That's a perfect analogy. It makes it way harder for those bad guys to get in, even if they steal your password.
Which happens all the time.
All the time. That's why MFA is essential these days. Now, speaking of protecting sensitive information,
Yeah.
MKK talks about data loss prevention, or DLP.
DLP, I've heard the term, but
It's all about stopping sensitive data from leaving your organization.
whether it's intentional or accidental.
Exactly. Think of it as a security guard at the exit, making sure no sensitive information sneaks out.
So like a data bouncer.
Yeah. They can monitor emails for sensitive info, like credit card numbers or social security numbers.
Oh, so they can block those emails from being sent.
Exactly. They can also stop people from uploading files to those shady cloud storage sites or copying data to external drives.
It's like that filter that catches sensitive info before it can escape.
Exactly. It's all about keeping your data safe and under your control.
Sounds crucial. Now, MKK also talks about these other tools, PM and PM.
Ah, yes. PM and PM, they're all about controlling who has access to what,
Correct.
especially for those really important systems and data.
The crown jewels.
Right. PM stands for Privilege Identity Management, and it focuses on those special accounts that have elevated permissions.
Like administrators.
Exactly. The ones who can make big changes or see all the sensitive stuff. Those are the accounts attackers really want.
Because they can do the most damage.
Right. So PM helps you manage and secure those accounts. So if one gets compromised, the damage is limited.
Makes sense. It's all about damage control.
Exactly. And PM has all these cool features like just-in-time access.
What's that?
It means you only give someone those special permissions when they absolutely need them.
So like a temporary key?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And multi-factor authentication for those accounts too.
Extra security.
Right. And it keeps track of who accessed what and when.
So there's a log of everything.
Exactly. That
Right.
way you can see if something fishy is going on. Now, PAM is a little different. Privilege Access Management.
Okay.
It's a broader system that controls access to all sorts of systems and applications.
So more comprehensive than PM.
Right. PAM does things like store passwords, securely record sessions, even manage those special commands that only certain people should be able to use.
So it's like having an extra set of eyes on everything.
You got it.
Yeah.
It can even work with those other tools we talked about, like SIEM and SOAR, for a complete picture of access activity.
Sounds like a powerful combination.
It is. Both PAM and PM are essential for keeping things locked down, especially those super sensitive systems.
Right, so you can't just rely on one or the other.
Exactly. It's about using both together to control who can do what and minimize the damage if something does go wrong.
Makes sense. Now, before we move on, MKK mentions another big area of security, the cloud.
The cloud, that's where everything's going these days.
Which means securing it is a big deal.
Huge deal. It's a whole new world of security challenges.
Definitely sounds like a topic for another deep dive.
It is. But MKK gives us a taste of what's involved. He mentions a bunch of tools like CASB, CSPM, CWPP, CNAPP, CINM.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Slow down. Too many acronyms.
Sorry, I'll
What do I
explain.
do?
So CASB stands for Cloud Access Security Broker, and it's basically a middleman between your organization and your cloud provider.
Okay.
It helps make sure your data is protected as it moves back and forth between your own systems and the cloud.
So it's like a border guard for your cloud traffic.
Exactly. Then there's CSPM, which stands for Cloud Security Posture Management. It helps you analyze how secure your cloud environment is and find any weak spots that need fixing.
So it's like a security consultant for the cloud.
Perfect analogy. Then there's CWPP Cloud Workload Protection Platform.
Another mouthful.
I know. But these tools are all about protecting your apps and data that live in the cloud. Things like vulnerability management, intrusion detection, all that good stuff.
So like security guards patrolling the streets of your cloud city.
I like it. Then there's CNAPP, Cloud Native Application Protection Platform.
This is getting ridiculous.
I know. It's a mouthful, but basically it combines those other tools like CASB, CSPM, and CWPP into one big platform.
So it's like a one-stop shop for cloud security.
Exactly. And finally, there's CIEM, Cloud Infrastructure Entitlement Management.
Bill, you lost me again.
This one's all about controlling who has access to what in your cloud environment.
So like a super detailed access control system.
Exactly. Making sure only the right people can do the right things at the right time.
Sounds.
It is. It's all about minimizing the risk of someone getting access to things they shouldn't.
Okay, that was a lot of cloud security talk.
It was. But we'll definitely dive deeper into all that in future episodes.
Looking forward to it. But for now, I think we've got a good understanding of all the different tools and strategies involved in defensive cybersecurity.
We've covered a lot of ground, from those basic principles like defense in depth to the wild world of cloud security.
It's been fascinating.
Mm.
But I have a feeling this is just the beginning.
You're right. Defensive cybersecurity is constantly changing. New threats are popping up all the time.
It's like a never-ending arms race.
Exactly. The attackers are always trying to find new ways in, and the defenders are always trying to stay one step ahead.
Which makes it so challenging and so exciting.
Absolutely. That's why it's so important to stay curious, stay informed, and stay vigilant.
Well said. Now let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our exploration of defensive cybersecurity, diving even deeper into some of the more advanced concepts and technologies that MKK discusses in his article. Welcome back, everyone. Before the break, we were talking about some of the fundamentals of defensive cybersecurity. Now let's really dig into some of MKK's insights and explore those more specialized tools and tactics.
Yeah, let's get into the nitty-gritty of how organizations actually use these defenses in the real world.
Okay, so MKK talks about vulnerability assessment tools. What exactly are we talking about here, and how are these different from some of the other tools we've discussed?
So think of vulnerability assessment tools like they're kind of like proactive threat hunters. They're all about finding weaknesses in your systems before the attackers can get to them.
So before they can exploit them.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a building inspector come in and look for structural problems before an earthquake hits rather than trying to fix everything afterward.
Okay, so it's about finding and fixing those cracks in your armor before someone can take advantage of them.
Precisely.
What kind of tools are we talking about here?
Well, MKK mentions protocol analyzers, and you might remember those from earlier.
Yeah, I think we talked about them.
We did. We talked about them in terms of detecting malicious activity. But
right. So they're kind of like listening in on the network conversations, trying to catch any suspicious chatter.
Exactly. But they can also be used proactively to actually identify vulnerabilities in like your network configurations or maybe even application cloud.
Oh, so instead of just reacting to attacks, you're using those same detective tools to make your defenses stronger.
Yeah. It's like a detective using their eavesdropping skills, not just to solve crimes, but to actually prevent them from happening in the first place.
That's a great analogy. What makes protocol analyzers so effective for this?
So what they do is they let security pros capture and analyze network traffic in a lot of detail. Like they can see the individual packets of data that are flowing between different devices.
So it's like having X-ray vision into your network traffic.
Yeah. It's like being able to see under the hood and understand exactly what's going on.
Okay, so by analyzing that data, they can find vulnerabilities.
Exactly. They can find things like insecure protocols, settings that aren't configured properly, or even flaws in the actual code that might be leaking sensitive information.
It sounds like a really powerful tool.
Oh, it is. It gives you that deep level of visibility into what's happening on your network.
Does MKK mention any specific protocol analyzers?
He does. He mentions tools like TCPDump, WinDump, Wireshark, and T-Shark. All of those are commonly used for this kind of work.
Wireshark. I think I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's pretty popular. It lets you capture, analyze, and even manipulate network traffic all in real time.
So it's more for the pros.
Yeah, you need some technical expertise to use it effectively.
Definitely not something for the average user.
Right. It's more for those security professionals and ethical hackers who need that really granular level of control.
Okay, so we've got our proactive defenses covered with those vulnerability assessment tools. What else does MKK highlight in terms of building a strong security posture?
Well, he reminds us about the importance of network segmentation. We touched on that a little bit earlier, but
yeah, I remember that.
It's worth taking a closer look.
Okay, I'm ready.
So imagine this. You wouldn't design a ship with just one giant compartment, right?
No, if you get a hole in the whole thing goes down.
Exactly. Ships are built with multiple compartments to contain damage. And network segmentation, it's that same concept applied to your network.
So you're building those watertight compartments in your network to isolate different areas and prevent a breach from spreading everywhere.
That's the idea. By dividing your network into smaller, more manageable segments, you limit the impact of a security breach.
So, like having separate areas for different departments with different levels of security.
Yeah. Like you might have one segment for finance, one for HR, another for your guest Wi-Fi network.
Okay, so that way if someone hacks into the guest Wi-Fi.
They can't get to the important financial data or employee records.
Right, so segmentation is about containing damage and protecting those critical assets.
Exactly. It makes it way harder for attackers to move around your network, which buys your security team more time to respond.
So how do you actually go about segmenting a network?
MKK talks about a couple of common methods, VLANs and subnetting.
Okay, I think we touched on those briefly before.
We did, but let's dig in a little deeper.
Sorry.
So VLANs stand for Virtual Local Area Networks, and they let you create logical segments within your physical network.
So it's like building those virtual walls to separate different departments or groups of devices.
You got it. It's like having separate rooms within the same building, but those rooms are virtual.
And then subnetting.
Subnetting is a way to divide your IP address space into smaller, more manageable pieces.
Okay, that one's a little more technical for me.
Yeah, it is a bit more on the technical side, but the big idea is still the same. You're creating boundaries to separate different parts of your network.
It's all about compartmentalization.
Exactly. You're limiting access and trying to prevent a small breach from turning into a major catastrophe.
But managing a segmented network, I imagine that could get pretty complex.
It can, especially for large organizations with a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, it's not something you just throw together.
Right. You need to plan it carefully and think about how it's going to work with your existing infrastructure.
Right. It's all about finding that balance between security and complexity.
Exactly. And MKK takes the segmentation idea even further and talks about microsegmentation.
Microsegmentation. That sounds even more granular.
It is. While regular segmentation is about dividing the network into those broad zones, microsegmentation is about getting way more specific.
Okay, so instead of walls between rooms, it's like walls between individual pieces of furniture.
That's a great way to think about it. With microsegmentation, you can create very specific rules about what can communicate with what.
So you're really locking things down.
Yeah, you're reducing that attack surface and limiting the potential damage of a breach.
Sounds super effective, but I bet it's also super complex to set up.
It can be, especially in those large and dynamic environments where things are always changing.
So how do you even manage that?
Well, it takes careful planning and the right tools, but the benefits, especially in cloud environments, are huge.
Right, because with the cloud, it's harder to define those clear boundaries.
Exactly. Microsegmentation helps solve that by giving you that granular level of control. Even in the cloud, you can make sure your most sensitive data is locked down.
So it's like those walls are still there, they're just invisible.
That's a great way to think about it. You've got that control back even in the cloud.
Okay, so we've got segmentation and microsegmentation working together to make our networks more secure, whether they're on premises or in the cloud.
Right. It's about having those multiple layers of defense no matter where your data lives.
Now, MKK also talks about another concept that's gaining a lot of attention in cybersecurity, zero trust architecture. Is that what I think it is?
It probably is. It's a pretty big deal in the world of cybersecurity these days.
I've heard the term, but to be honest, I'm not really sure what it means.
It's basically a security framework that says you should never trust, always verify.
So it's like you're suspicious of everyone, even your own employees.
In a way, yeah. It's based on the idea that no user or device should be trusted by default. No matter where they are on the network or off the network, it doesn't matter.
So you're basically treating everyone like a potential threat.
Not a threat exactly, but you're not just assuming they're trustworthy.
So it's like having a security checkpoint at every door in the building, even for people who already have a badge.
That's a great analogy. With zero trust, every user and every device has to be verified every time they try to access anything.
It sounds like a major shift in how we think about security.
It is. It's a more strict and proactive approach. You're not just waiting for something bad to happen. You're trying to prevent it from happening in the first place.
So what caused this shift to zero trust? Why is it so popular now?
Well, a few things. One is that the threats are getting worse, more sophisticated, and those old perimeter defenses like firewalls, they're just not enough anymore.
Right, we've talked about that.
And the way we work has changed too, with everyone working remotely, cloud computing, mobile devices. All of that has made those old network boundaries much more blurry.
It's harder to define the perimeter when everyone's accessing resources from everywhere.
Exactly. And that's where Zero Trust shines. It's all about securing access to those resources no matter where the user is.
So it's not about where you are, it's about who you are and what you're trying to access.
Precisely. And it's about verifying every request every single time.
So what are the main ideas behind Zero Trust? What are the key principles?
Well, there are a few, but some of the most important ones are assuming breach, least privilege access, continuous verification, and we've already talked about micro-segmentation.
Right. Assuming breach, meaning you act like someone's already gotten a least privilege, meaning people only get access to the absolute minimum they need to do their jobs.
Right. And continuous verification means you never assume trust. You always check no matter who it is.
Okay. So it's a really comprehensive approach.
It is. It's about being proactive and assuming that the bad guys are already inside.
So you're always on high alert.
Exactly. You can't afford to be complacent in today's world.
Okay. I can see why Zero Trust is becoming so important. It's like a whole new mindset for security.
It is. It's about shifting from reacting to threats to anticipating them.
So you're playing offense instead of defense.
In a way, yeah. You're trying to stay one step ahead of the attackers by making it as hard as possible for them to get in and do any damage.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, moving on from Zero Trust, MKK talks about another security measure that's becoming increasingly important, multi-factor authentication, or MFA.
Ah, MFA. Simple, but so effective.
I know it's something everyone should be using, but to be honest, I still don't really understand.
It's really just about adding an extra layer of security to your accounts.
Okay.
So instead of just relying on your password, which is something, you know, MFA makes you prove who you are in a different way.
Like what?
It could be something you have, like a code sent to your phone or something.
Yeah.
You are like your fingerprint.
So like a two-factor authentication.
Yeah. It's making it much harder for attackers to get in even if they manage to steal your password.
Which happens all the time these days.
Right. So MFA is no longer optional. It's essential. Now, speaking of protecting sensitive information, MKK also discusses data loss prevention, or DLP.
DLP. Yeah, I've heard the term, but I'm not really sure.
So DLP, it's all about preventing that sensitive data from leaking out of your organization, whether it's intentional or accidental.
Okay, so it's about stopping data leaks.
Exactly. Think of it like a security guard posted at all the exits, making sure that no sensitive information walks out the door.
So it's like a data bouncer.
That's a great way to put it. DLP can do things like monitor your outgoing emails for sensitive stuff like credit card numbers or social security numbers.
And block those emails from going out.
Exactly. It can also prevent people from uploading those sensitive files to unauthorized cloud storage sites or copying data to external drives.
So it's about putting up those safeguards to keep that sensitive data under control.
Precisely. It's a key part of any security strategy.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, MKK also talks about these other tools, PIM and PAM.
Yes, those are all about controlling who has access to what.
Okay, break it down for me.
PIM stands for Privilege Identity Management, and it focuses on managing those special accounts that have elevated permissions.
So like system administrators.
Exactly. They're the ones who can make big changes to the system or see all the sensitive data.
So those are the accounts that the attackers really want to get their hands on.
You got it. Because those accounts can do the most damage. So PIM helps you manage and secure those accounts and limit the damage if one of them does get compromised.
Okay, so it's about damage control.
Right. And PIM has all these cool features like just-in-time access, which means you only give someone those special permissions when they absolutely need them for a specific task.
Oh, so like a temporary key.
Exactly. And yeah. Multi-factor authentication for those accounts too, for extra security.
Makes sense.
And PIM keeps track of who accessed what and when, so there's a log of all the activity.
So you can go back and see if something suspicious happened.
You got it. Now, PAM is a bit different. Privilege access management.
Okay, so what's the difference?
It's a broader system for controlling access to all kinds of systems and applications.
So it's more comprehensive.
Yeah. PAM does things like storing passwords, securely recording those user sessions, and managing those special commands that only certain people should be able to use.
So it's like having an extra set of eyes on everything.
Exactly. And it can even work with those other tools we talked about, like SIEM and SAR, to give you a complete picture of all the access activity.
So it's all about connecting the dots and seeing the bigger picture.
Exactly. PAM and PAM, they're both essential for keeping things locked down, especially for those really important systems.
So you need both. Pim and Pam working together.
You got it. It's about using both to make sure the right people have access to the right things at the right time and minimizing the damage if something does go wrong.
Makes sense. Now, before we wrap things up, I know MKK mentioned another important area of security, the cloud.
The cloud. It's where everyone's moving their data and applications these days, which means security in the cloud is more important than ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, securing the cloud sounds like a whole other deep dive.
It is. It's a whole new set of challenges, but MKK at least gives us a taste of what's involved. He mentions all these tools like CASB, CSPM, CWPP, C9APP, CIAM.
Whoa, 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 slow down. Too many acronyms. My head's spinning.
Sorry. It is a lot, but I'll try to explain it simply.
Please do.
Okay, so CASB stands for Cloud Access Security Broker, and it's basically a middleman between your organization and your cloud provider.
Okay.
It helps make sure your data stays safe as it moves between your own systems and the cloud.
So like a security checkpoint for all your cloud traffic.
Exactly. Then you've got CSPM. Cloud Security Posture Management.
Okay.
It helps you analyze how secure your cloud environment is and find any of those weak spots that need to be fixed.
So like a security consultant for your cloud?
Exactly. Then there's CWPP, Cloud Workload Protection Platform.
Okay. Another mouthful.
Yeah, I know. But CWPP is all about protecting your applications and your data that actually live in the cloud.
So like security guards patrolling the streets of your cloud city.
I like that. Then there's CNAPP. Cloud Native Application Protection Platform.
This is getting out of control.
I know, it's a mouthful. But CNAPP basically combines some of those other tools like CISB, CSPM, and CWPP all into a single platform.
So it's like a one-stop shop for cloud security.
Exactly. And finally, there's CIMC, Cloud Infrastructure Entitlement Management.
I'm lost again.
CIMM is all about managing who has access to what in your cloud environment.
So like a super detailed access control system.
Exactly. Making sure only the right people can do the right things in your cloud at the right time.
It sounds like a lot to keep track of.
It is. But it's all super important for securing the cloud.
Yeah, I can see that. It sounds like securing the cloud is a whole other world.
It is. But don't worry, we'll dive deeper into all those cloud security topics in future episodes.
Looking forward to it. But for now, I think we've got a pretty good understanding of all the different tools and strategies for defensive cybersecurity.
We've definitely covered a lot, from those basic principles like defense in depth to the wild world of cloud security.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind tour, but I have a feeling this is just the beginning.
Oh, absolutely. Cybersecurity is constantly changing. New threats, new vulnerabilities are always popping up.
They're like that never-ending arms race.
Exactly. Attackers are always finding new ways to get in, and defenders are always trying to stay one step ahead.
Which makes it such a challenging and exciting field.
It does. That's why it's so important to stay informed, stay curious, and never stop learning.
Well said. Now let's take a moment to really think about what we've learned and try to pull out some of those key takeaways for our listeners. Welcome back, everyone. We spent this whole episode talking about all sorts of defensive cybersecurity tools and strategies, and honestly, MKK has given us some incredible insights.
It really has been quite a journey through the world of cyber defense.
It has. From firewalls and intrusion detection systems to things like zero trust architecture and even all the complexities of cloud security.
That's a lot to take in.
It is. But it's clear that protecting yourself from these cyber threats, it takes a multifaceted approach.
For sure. There's no magic solution, no single tool that's going to solve all your problems.
Right. It's not about finding that one perfect thing. It's about
layers.
Layers, exactly.
You got to have that layered defense system combining technology and processes and, of course, people all working together.
It's like building a fortress.
Yeah.
With those strong walls and vigilant guards and a whole defense force ready to go.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are some of the big takeaways our listeners should remember?
Well, I think one of the most important things is that cybersecurity, it's not a one-time thing. You don't just set it and forget it.
Right.
It's a constant process. You have to be vigilant. You have to adapt and be willing to embrace those new technologies and approaches as the threats change.
Because they're always changing.
They are.
So it's not about finding that one perfect solution. It's more about...
It's a mindset.
A mindset.
It's about building a security culture that goes through every level of your organization.
I like that. And that means?
It means having the right mix of technologies and processes, but most importantly, the people.
The people.
The people who are trained and ready to go.
Right. You can have all the fancy tools in the world.
It's true.
But if you don't have the right people to use them.
They're useless.
Exactly. So it's about having that human expertise to interpret the data, to make those tough decisions, and ultimately to keep your systems and your data safe.
And it's not just about the security team either.
Right.
Everyone in the organization has a role to play.
From the top to the bottom.
Exactly. Everyone from the CEO to their intern needs to know about the risks and follow those best practices and report anything that looks suspicious.
Yeah, it's about everyone being aware and understanding that security is everyone's responsibility.
Exactly. You got to create that culture of security awareness where everyone's on the same page.
And I think another big takeaway is that the threats, they're constantly changing.
Always changing.
What works today might not work tomorrow.
That's right.
Because attackers are always finding new ways to exploit vulnerabilities.
Yeah, they're always innovating, coming up with new tools, new techniques to get into systems and steal data.
So how do you keep up?
You got to stay informed. Read those security blogs. Go to conferences and keep learning about the latest threats and vulnerabilities.
Stay curious.
Stay curious.
So it's about being proactive.
Exactly.
Anticipating those threats and taking action before they can cause damage.
That's the key. It's about being one step ahead of the bad guys.
Well said. I think that's a perfect note to end on. MKK really emphasizes that the most powerful tool we have is knowledge.
It's true.
The more you know about the threats you face, the better prepared you'll be to protect yourself and your organization.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power in the world of cybersecurity.
So to all our listeners out there, I encourage you to keep learning, keep asking questions, and stay curious about this amazing world of cybersecurity.
It is an amazing world. It's challenging, it's constantly evolving, and it's incredibly important.
And the more you know, the safer you'll be.
Couldn't agree more. So until next time, stay safe, stay secure, and stay curious.
That's it for this deep dive. Thanks for listening, everyone.